Working Cows Podcast, Episode 90.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Hi, everybody. This is Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network. And today we are brought to you by the High Plains Ranch Practicum, and we are joined by one of the instructors of the High Plains Ranch Practicum. Dallas Mount is an extension educator for the University of Wyoming and an instructor for the High Plains Ranch Practicum. This is the final class for the High Plains Ranch Practicum, final opportunity for you to get on in on it. And I decided to ask Dallas to come on and tell us a little bit about the High Plains Ranch Practicum today. We'll get to that in a minute, but first we're going to start off talking to Dallas about profitability targets for the 2018 calf crop and then how we can use that to make projections for the 2019 calf crop. And Dallas is also in the process of a transition. He is moving on to take over Ranch Management Consultant, so we'll talk to Dallas a little bit about that as well. Dallas, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows podcast.
Thanks, Clay. Glad to be here.
We are going to talk today about profit targets, and we're going to work off some numbers for the 2018 calf crop, as we are just now getting the 2019 calf crop out to grass in most cases, or some of them are still being born. So what are you thinking about when we start to talk about profit targets? What are you hoping to accomplish with the discussion and the analysis of the business in that way?
All right, Clay. Yeah, sounds good. So what these numbers come from is people that have participated with us and sharing their economics. We used to do a really robust benchmark data set out of the Ranch Practicum participants and others that would share their numbers with us annually, where we said, you know, here's the top 20%, here's the bottom 20%, here's the average. And you guys will see those out of some universities. I think Kansas State does a good set. I think North Dakota still puts a set out. But as we kept going on this, for one thing, we were less confident in some of the numbers that people were sending us. I think they were their initial guesses at some things. So it was a little bit hard to feel confident with putting out numbers that we weren't confident in. And then secondly, we realized over time that there's really not a lot of things that make the difference between a profitable ranch and an unprofitable ranch. And, I mean, it generally doesn't come down to things like fuel cost per cow or utilities cost per cow and all that stuff. So a lot of that's just noise, you know, so we could take that out and really hone in on what are the 8, 10, 12 things that really make a difference for ranchers in terms of profitability. So that's where these profit targets came from. And we've been using this method for probably the last 6 or 7 years with the Ranch Practicum School. So I'd like to walk through the 2018 profit targets. So these were ones that we were sharing with the class and others back in the, you know, summer to fall of 2018, saying these are where your cows should be. If they're not here, look through this and see if you can identify some areas of weakness for your ranch and then develop some strategies to address those areas. So that's how we use them. Does that make sense?
Makes sense. I will say right off the jump that this will be linked at workingcows.net/90. This is episode 90 of the Working Cows podcast. So the profit targets will be there linked, and you can go and follow along as we talk through them if you want. So just visit workingcows.net/90, and you will be able to follow along. So how much of this is on the cost side? How much of this is, as Burke Tigert would say in his five essentials of a profitable ranch, waging war on the costs? How much of it is on that side, and how much of it is on the production side or however else that might be broken down?
Well, if you look at the list, if you got the list in front of you, we've got maybe, I would guess, 10 items on there. The top three are related to productivity, and everything else is on the cost side. And if there's something to not get so excited about, I'd say it's in those top three. So if that gives you an indication, most of the leverage for ranchers is on the cost side, right? We've got some things that we can do in terms of productivity to improve the herd. But for most guys whose numbers I look at, they've got very productive herds. I mean, we're getting good preg rates, we're getting good weaning rates, we're getting, you know, calves weaned per female exposed. I mean, you rarely look at a ranch that doesn't have good productivity numbers. You know, much more common thing is to look at somebody whose costs are out of line with these targets.
Right. Yeah, I think it was Dave Pratt who quoted Stan Parsons who said that we're hitting bullseyes on the wrong target. You know, and we're hitting the bullseyes of profit or of productivity, but to be sustainable, we need to be hitting the bullseyes of profitability.
Yes, exactly.
If the biggest leverage point is on the cost side, what is the biggest lever that we can push?
Feed cost per cow. That and looking at your heifer development or cow depreciation cost per cow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how are you seeing people do a good job of pushing that lever of feed costs?
Yeah. Hey, if I can, let's back up a second. I want to start at the top and then let's work down and we're going to get there.
Okay.
Okay. So let's start at the top of this list. Pregnancy rate, females bred per female exposed. We think a good target is 93%. A lot of people are going to look at that and say, dang, that's high. You know, there's a lot of profitable herds that are not achieving that target. There's a lot of profitable herds that are over that target, or I'm sorry, a lot of unprofitable herds that are over that target. Does that make sense? So, yeah. You know, you run into somebody in the coffee shop, yep, got 100% preg rate last year. And you, okay, so what was the profitability per
$2,000 of cow and
feed? Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's a target to look at and say, okay, how are we doing on preg rates? If you're in the upper 80s, I'm not going to get too excited about it, right? We're going to look at your cost side first before we see what it is. If you're below 85, there's an issue, right? So pregnancy rate's the first thing we look at. We just kind of put it in the ballpark. Again, I said these productivity ones are not ones that I really get real excited about, and we'll kind of discuss why that is. It's because there's a lot more leverage on the cost side, right? So weaning rate, next one. Calves weaned per female exposed. We think you should be around 90%, meaning for every female you expose to breeding that you intend on giving bred, we want to wean about 90% calves out of them, right? So if we've got that pregnancy rate of 93%, what that essentially means is about a 3% death loss from confirmed pregnant to weaning. Okay, so we can lose one or two of them at calving time, and then one or so from calving to weaning.
Okay,
so fairly low death loss there. Now the third one related to productivity is calf value per cow. Okay, so now an important distinction here, we're going to move towards cows on January 1, which for most of us are confirmed pregnant cows. Okay, so that's the ratio here. And the dollar at the time is $835. So for every cow that we have confirmed pregnant on January 1, we want to get $835 of value out of her. Okay, so some of those are going to lose a calf, right? Some of them are going to lose a calf between calving and weaning. Take our total calf sales. Our total calf value at the end of the year, whether we sell them or not, and then divide them by the January 1 inventory of cows and see where that number comes out. What we used to report here is pounds weaned per female exposed. You've probably heard of that number, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So that's a number that's often thrown around in terms of how productive is a cow herd. Pounds weaned per female exposed. Who cares about pounds? Don't we want dollars?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So let's get over this pounds thing, because who cares? I mean, if you wean a 450-pound calf or you wean a 550-pound calf, what's the difference in value? Probably not a whole lot.
Yep. I've probably talked about it here before, but we sold some of our light steers and heifers in January or February of this year, and I watched some 750-pound steers go through ahead of them. And these ones were real green. Ours were real green. The other ones had obviously been on feed. And I think the actual dollars, there was $50 difference per head in their cow, in their steers from ours. And
wow.
I was
Once you start to look at things this way, you just can't help but hardly sit there and shake your head, and you try to not to do it out, you know, outside of your head.
That guy's probably got a bigger belt buckle than you do, though, because his calves were bigger. No, we focus on the wrong things, don't we? Jeez, it's amazing about that. Just a little aside story here. I was meeting with a gentleman last week sometime. This guy's been really successful in other businesses. He's bought a ranch. He's obviously a sharp businessman, you know, and so he was sitting, he called me out and kind of said, you know what, this ranch, we've got to make it cash flow. I'm tired of pumping money into it. And he said, here's what my numbers are. And the first thing he put to me is his calf weights. And, you know, I'm like, you're focused on the wrong thing. You know, we've got to change your focus. We've got to move it to something else. So anyway, it's amazing that even really smart people that are well-intended can fall into this trap, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, okay. So those are the only three related to production. Okay. So calf value per cow. So essentially, think of that $835. We're going to be working off of that on terms of the cost side. So if we got $835 in our pocket for every calf, or every cow January 1 is going to produce $835. So now we're going to be subtracting off of that on all our costs. Okay. Just another little quick story here. I like to get, when I get in front of larger groups, I like to ask them, what's it cost you to produce a calf? And I have them write it down on a piece of paper and just pass it to the middle in a big wad so nobody can see who wrote what, you know. And the numbers we get on those kind of examples are interesting. Usually with a group of like 100, we'll have anywhere from $250 on the low end to $1,250 on the high end. So so it's interesting to see what people think it costs them to produce a calf. Now, it's not really a fair question because people are thinking, okay, cash costs, economic costs, you know, what is it? So, all right, so let's jump into the things that we can do something about or do more about. First one is heifer development or cow depreciation. Okay. How we calculate this is probably a little more complicated than I want to get into right now on the podcast. If you're interested in it, go to some of the links Clay's going to provide, and you can walk through our unit cost of production spreadsheets and see how we come up with that number. Essentially what it is, it's cull value and replacement value, and the difference between those two divided out for every cow on the ranch. Okay. So we're going to suggest if a ranch can do it for less than $110 a cow, if you can replace those bred females for less than $110 per cow per year, you're doing pretty good. Okay, a lot of ranches, this is going to be over $200. Some of them, it's going to be close to $300.
Let me make sure I'm understanding you right. Your cull cows are going in for way up price, say $800 a cow. You want to be able to develop a heifer into the herd for $910 or less. Is that what you're saying?
No. What I'm saying is, okay, so let's say we're going to replace 20% of the cow herd a year. Okay. So I've got 100 cows. So every year I'm going to have I'm going to have about 18 cull cows for sale because two of them are going to die in the pasture and I'm not going to sell them. Okay. So I've got 18 of those cull cows that I can sell for that $700, $800, whatever it's going to be. Okay. Now I've got to replace 20 as bred females. Okay. I'm going to go out and buy, let's say I'm going to do the standard thing and I'm going to buy a bred heifer and I'm going to pay $1,500 for those 20 bred heifers. Okay. So I take my $1,500 times the 20, okay. There's a total dollar amount. I take my cull sales of the 18 that I got to cull times let's say I got $700 for them, that dollar amount. I take what I paid for the bred heifers, subtract out the cull value because I essentially got that money back out of them, right? And then that number that's left over, that difference, that was my replacement cost. Okay, so now I divide that by the 100 cows because I want to get a replacement cost per cow. That's where I'm coming up with this $110 a cow.
All right.
Does that help?
I'm with you now. Yep.
Trying to do math as these guys are listening to this on the podcast and driving down the road. Now their heads are spinning and they're across the yellow line, right?
Yeah. Listen again, take notes.
All right. Okay, so breeding costs. Now, you guys have had some great podcasts on what you can do to reduce cow depreciation. Okay, so let's not recover all the different leverage points on there. But the point is, you got to think differently than the average Joe. Okay? You can't just take those cull cows to the sale and then go out and either retain your own in a traditional heifer development program or go out and buy somebody else's heifers. and think you're going to hit the mark on this thing. Okay? It's not going to work. So take some opportunity to put some leverage on that. Related to that one is breeding cost per cow. So this is just essentially what you pay for a bull, what you salvage a bull for, divided by the number of years you get out of him. We think you should be about $35 a cow or less on breeding costs. That does not include bull pasture costs. We're going to lump that in terms of total feed costs on the cow. But just on that bull depreciation, essentially, is what that is. We think you should be at less than $35 a cow. Now, back to the one you originally asked me about. If there's one leverage point for somebody to work on, this is it. Hay cost per cow. If I was looking at somebody's ranch and they said, well, what do you think? How am I doing? And I could only see one number, this is the number I'd want to see. Okay. How much hay does it take you to get a cow through the year? Our target is half a ton of hay per cow, or about $50 per cow in hay costs, or about 30 days of hay feeding. Okay. If you can hit that target, you've got a lot of competitive advantage against everybody else that's, you know, feeding hay for 3 to sometimes 6 months.
Right.
I want to take an opportunity here and say there's not a recipe for a profitable ranch. Okay. Not every profitable ranch is a low hay ranch. Okay. There are ranches that are feeding 2-3 tons of hay per cow per year and are still pretty dang profitable. I also want to be really clear here and tell people I'm not suggesting you starve your cows. Okay, I get this all the time. I got this just last week from a guy. Man, this stuff you're telling people to do, I see a neighbor out there and their cows look like crap every year. And you know, some of them die every year from lack of feed. That's not what we're talking about here. Okay? We're not talking about not feeding cows. We're talking about putting together a system and a program in which a cow can get the majority of her nutritional needs on her own, okay? Whether that's grazing feed, whether, you know, you're talking about stockpiled aftermath, whatever it might be.
What I've seen as I've thought about this a lot is that the biggest barrier between people and feeding less hay is a plan.
Yeah, that's well put, right? Yeah, what's the plan for making that happen? Cool, I like it. Hay cost per cow. The other reason why this is such a big issue is it's not just the cost of the feed. What's the other cost that goes along with that?
Tractor starts, maintenance, diesel fuel.
There you go.
Time.
People. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's not just the cost of the feed, it's the cost of the feeding, right? So it's all the stuff that you have in order to be a high feed ranch.
Right.
Yeah. So you're going to see this one come out when we get down to overheads as well. But hay cost per cow. There's the number one deal right there. That one, of any of these numbers, that's the most correlated with profitability. Okay. So if you want to be fancy and call it the R squared value from your statistic days, that one's going to have the highest R squared. Okay. It's going to have the most correlation with profitability.
Sure.
All right, let's jump on down the list here. Fed feed per cow. So this includes hay. So we're talking hay, protein, mineral. We think you should be less than $80 a cow when you add all those things together. Okay. So that's probably a $15 a cow mineral package. And then another, you know, few bucks and some protein to get them through the year.
Sure. What's the bang for the buck on this? I mean, are you looking at mineral tubs? Are you looking at cubes or cake? How are you seeing people manage these nutritional needs in a way that helps them hit these targets?
It's pretty variable. I think the most common thing we'd say is somebody's paying attention, right? And they're not just buying what they always bought or what somebody's used. You know, tubs can work in areas where it's really going to reduce the amount of labor and you're using them to get some animal distribution things as well. Usually when we look at price per pound of protein delivered to the animal, a tub is the most expensive way to do it. That's usually the case. So the things that we see often win in terms of cost of delivery to the animal in terms of protein is alfalfa hay often is a pretty high winner. Distiller's grain, some dried distiller's grain, this, depending on where it's priced at and what your hauling and storage costs and all those kind of things are. Aaron was talking recently about soybeans with the soybean market where it is, of just looking, going and getting some soybeans. So.
Right.
Yeah, that one might be a winner. But somebody's doing the math, right? So, and this is something you got to do every year because the markets are all going to change on this. So you got to sit down and say, all right, what can I get distiller's grain delivered for? And what can I, you know, what's it going to cost me to take it out to the cow and all that? So there's a really cool spreadsheet that that we use in class to walk through that. Yeah, so there's some leverage points there. I probably don't want to get into the mineral stuff just because there's so many differences there and you know, everybody's got their own thing. I will say this, if you've got like your own coat from your mineral company and your own set of gloves and like 14 sorting sticks, you're probably paying too much for mineral.
I wonder. Yeah, I always wonder about those guys. How many pallets did that take?
Your own trip to the Bahamas from the mineral.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So.
But you know, you talk about soybeans and the need to be paying attention to it on a yearly basis because every year is going to be different. And I think it's just another one of those deals that people are waging war on costs. They're doing everything they can to hunt down the most affordable feed they can and figure out a way to meet that cow's needs. Like you said, we're not starving them, but meet that cow's needs in the most economical way possible.
Right. I think that's a commonality. You got it. All right. Next one on the list is total feed cost per cow. This is going to include the opportunity cost of pasture or your actual pasture rent. We're going to say under $400 a cow. And some of your Nebraska guys are going to go throw their hands up in the air and go, yeah, right. You know, because they're going to be paying $60 a cow just in grazing costs. So if you were grazing a cow for 12 months out of the year, there's no way you're going to hit that number, right? If you're paying those kind of things, there's a lot of room in that number, and there's some different ways of calculating that. So let's say you've got a ranch and you're going to lease it to your cows. Okay, so it's your own pasture, and you're going to lease it to your cows, and you're going to charge them a flat cash lease. So you're going to say, all right, cows, you get this ranch for $50,000 a year. Okay. And now you get really good at your pasture management and you double your stocking rate. But your ranch lease stays at $50,000. Okay. So there's a way to play with the numbers to make it cheap to your cows. Okay. Well, if you actually went back and said, you know what, I could run twice as many cows for somebody and they'd still pay me $50 a cow a month to run there. And it's not really fair to charge it to your cows at that, okay? So I don't really want to get too hung up on this number. The point is there's a lot of different ways to calculate that. I think focusing in on that fed feed cost is probably the way to go. But we throw this number out as a target for folks to say, you know what, there is cost to that own pasture or certainly cost to cash leasing pasture, and you need to put that in there and figure out how much per cow in terms of value you're going to charge your cows.
That's that's another one of those. That's the first paradigm shift, I think, maybe of the High Plains Ranch practicum, is that you've got to start thinking about charging your cows to eat your grass. And
Right. They
don't get to graze it for free. And if somebody else would pay you more than your cows, then maybe you need to look at a different business model altogether. So in the middle of this episode, I do want to give you an opportunity to give a little pitch for the last of the High Plains Ranch practicums, and really honored and excited that I was able to participate in it. Really, it was where the Working Cows podcast started. Everything from the name to the idea to the continued prodding to do something all started there. So I wanted to have you on and give you an opportunity to make a pitch for the High Plains Ranch practicum and invite some people out to be involved. I think you're starting towards the end of June with the first class. So
yeah, that's right. So
pitch
you
away.
Know, if you haven't been yet, you better get your butt there. This is going to be your last shot to do it, as Clay said. In terms of the things I've got to be involved in with in extension work in my almost 20 years of extension, this has been the most rewarding thing. And it's rewarding because we get to be involved with people making significant changes in their lives and in their businesses. So if you've been to other extension classes or other things that you've gone to and you kind of roll your eyes and think, oh, my gosh, did I really get any value out of this? This is not one of those. Okay. If you feel that way when you leave this, we really dropped the ball somewhere. So, if you're in the ranching business, you need to invest in yourself in terms of professional development. And I think this is a great opportunity. So I'd say if you're within an 8-hour drive of Cheyenne, you better make it happen.
Yeah.
And even there's people that come in from further than that. So it's going to be a good use of your time. We've already got registrations rolling in, and some of the folks I know that are coming, and it's going to be another outstanding class. So it really is the peer group that helps make the class. So we've got some outstanding folks that have already signed up. They're going to take this opportunity to either repeat the class if they've been through it years ago or come for the first time. And I'm really excited about it. I had a gentleman the other day, just a little story here, was at a FFA awards banquet and was standing in line for the food. And a young guy that's doing some ranching, and he said, "Oh, Dallas, you still doing those ranch seminars?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, you know, talking about profitability in ranching, it's kind of silly, isn't it?" And I'm like, "Well, what do you mean?" And he said, "Well, you know," he said, "times are tough. You know, the last few years, markets wise, we've really kind of been going backwards." And he said, "We're just going to hunker down and wait because this market's going to turn around eventually, and it'll come back around, and we'll be good." And I just kind of shook my head, you know, and it wasn't the time to really, I was tempted to launch into him, right? But as I step back and think about that, what he's done in his mind is he's resolved himself to the fact that profit is something beyond his control, right? Profit in his mind is only a function of the markets.
Right.
Yeah. And so if that's the case, if that's his belief, then why in the world would he come to a class to talk about ranch profitability? Because it's something that's completely beyond his control. And so I guess I can understand where some people's, you know, why they're not interested in this. But if you're really in the ranching business, this, I think you need to get there. If you're in the ranching hobby, if you do this because it's a hobby for you, then stay home. Okay. Cause we're not going to talk about things that are appropriate for you. But if you want to make this a business and improve your quality of life, then I think you need to go. So how's that for a pitch, Clay?
Yeah, great. I do want to ask you about the guest speakers you have coming in this year. Do you have that all scheduled, or can you talk about some of the people that are coming to talk to the class?
Sure. Yeah, we've actually added one this year that I'm really excited about. The ones that have been with us for several years, Shannon and Melinda Sims, are coming back. Some folks say that having them there is just open their eyes to all the things you can do in terms of ranching. Wonderful family. Shannon and Melinda are passionate about ranching. So they're going to be there talking about grazing programs, talking about family dynamics in ranching, and being a part of that. We're going to go to Joel Vads. Joel runs a ranch for the CSU Research Foundation. It's a profit-motivated ranch, not a research ranch. And he's going to talk about making some major changes in their ranching business, you know, how he led those changes within that board that he has to answer to, and then also some of the interpersonal struggles he had about making those changes on their ranch. And so we go spend a half a day with him and tour their place and look at their cows and look at their grass. The one that we've added this year is James Sewell. James runs the TA Ranch over at Saratoga. I had the opportunity to listen to James at Stock Growers this last year talk about running a ranch for an absentee owner, but then also leading a crew. And the part where he talks about the people management and putting together all the pieces on that, I've never heard anybody do as good a job as he did with some of the points he made there. Even if you're just part of a family ranch, the things that he's going to say about putting together the crew, giving people things they can be responsible for, holding people accountable to making sure those things happen, and then creating a culture of excellence on the ranch. The few statements he said that stuck with me is, he said, "We don't allow any guys to stick around that want to be a martyr for the cowboy way." I love that, right? Yeah. So he's going to be with us. Let's see, other ones that come, Dan and Lynn Kirkbride come and talk about a multi-generational family ranch and some of the challenging dynamics of being a part of that and some strategies for managing through that. Derek Schwanebeck, Jim Lesmeister, two ranchers from Nebraska that have very different production systems, both very successful and really hit the point home that there's not a model for – there's not one cookie cutter for a profitable ranch, right? You can have them that look very different, but also meet their targets. And then Trey Patterson has confirmed again. Trey is the CEO of Padlock Ranches up in northern Wyoming, southern Montana, and in my opinion, probably one of the best ranch management minds in the nation right now. And he comes and spends the last day with us and really helps bring together all the things that we talk about throughout the several days and present them in a way that's applied and on a larger scale, but also applies it to even a small size family ranch.
You know, it makes me want to come again. It was great, great class. Really, it changed everything about the way I think about ranching, honestly. And I've tried not to be a thorn in my dad's side since then. But anyway, sometimes that happens still. But what is interesting to me is you were talking about Jim Lesmeister and Derek Schwanebeck, and when I was there, they spoke back to back, and just a microcosm of what we're talking about here today on these profit targets and of the class, like you said, no recipe for a profitable ranch. And it was Aaron Berger who pointed it out in both cases that Jim feeds with, I don't know what it was, a white tractor, like not just the color white, but the brand white, all that to say it's not bright green. And then Derek uses like a Suzuki Sidekick as his side-by-side. You know, and Aaron pointed him out both times. He's like, those cows will still eat that feed if it's not brought with a green tractor. And that, you know, how much did Derek pay for his Suzuki Sidekick? And it was like $1,500, you know, where a new side-by-side is, what, $12,000 to start? You know, just talking about waging war on costs and thinking differently about ranching. And the High Plains Ranch Practicum is unique in the fact that it gives you time to go get filled up, go home, ruminate on it, come back, get filled up again, you know, and tell people about what you're hearing and have them tell you you're crazy, and then go back and tell Dallas, well, this guy said I was crazy, so I guess this stuff doesn't work, and he can tell you, no, it really does work, and let me show you how. And so it's a great opportunity, and I really think, as Dallas said, you don't even have to think about it if you're within 8 hours of Cheyenne. If you're outside of that, it might take a little thinking, but if you're within 8 hours of Cheyenne, I know a great Airbnb that you can use almost every night of the High Plains Ranch Practicum, but I might use it one of those nights. So,
awesome. Thank you, Clay. Appreciate the kind words. But you know what? I'm too busy to attend this ranch practicum school. You don't understand. I'm putting up hay. I got fences to fix. I got cattle arriving. You know, if I stay home, $1,000 of stuff might fall apart at the ranch.
You can save that easily with just a few nuggets that you'll take home from the
school. I hope so. Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, so we're going to have a good class. I'm excited for it. You might have to drop in one or two days if you want and come revisit us. It'd be fun to meet up face to face again.
Yeah, for sure. So continuing on, I think we just finished up total feed cost, and we're talking about charging our cows to eat our grass and whether or not somebody else would pay us more to do it. So let's move on to, if you're ready, let's move on to total other livestock costs and on down the list.
Okay, absolutely. So total other livestock costs, this is kind of a catch-all for all the little odds and ends of things. So vet, marketing, trucking, you know, all those kind of things. Anything else you'd call a direct livestock cost, and we're going to throw it in this category, we think those should be less than $50 a cow. So if you've got all the rest of these catch-all things and they're more than $50 a cow, you might look and see what it is that's actually causing that. Equipment, building, and depreciation. Equipment and building, depreciation, and repair. Okay. So this is where you take all the stuff that you use to justify that cow herd and you throw it in a wad, and then you charge a depreciation expense on that. We recommend about 10% of the value a year on equipment. And then you also put in your repair bills and whatever those would be, and then you divide that total number by the number of cows. We think it should be less than $40 a cow. Cow-calf business cannot justify lots of stuff. Okay, so if you're trying to support a whole bunch of machines and buildings and things like that on a smaller number of cows, it's going to make it awful darn tough to do it. So the guy that you see driving the $80,000 pickup running 125 cows saying, oh, my cows are supporting that pickup, he's full of crap. Okay, something else is supporting
he's
that
on pickup. A family place.
There we go.
He's not paying for his land, and his cows aren't either.
That's right. I'm not opposed to nice pickups, but let's get a profitable cow herd, and let's run a heck of a lot of them, and then let's drive nice pickups. Okay. Okay, so equipment building depreciation repair, that's one we often see violated, right? And it's not done, I mean, out of oftentimes we make decisions for tax avoidance that then structure our business in a way that it's really hard to be successful in the future, right?
Yeah. So you talk about the guy from Caterpillar.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was a guy in our ranch practicum school several years ago, owner and operator of Wyoming Machinery Company, ran the second largest Caterpillar dealer in the U.S. Right. I think that it's and he said, every time I've made a business decision with tax avoidance as the primary strategy, it's come back to bite me. I think that was the quote he said, something like that, right? So this is the guy that owns the machinery dealership saying that, you know, when we put those tax avoidance as the primary motivation for a business decision, it often turns out to be a bad thing. So,
yeah, and I think the maxim that you guys repeated over and over again is, if it's not a good business decision, it's not a good tax decision.
That's what we hope to get through. I mean, sometimes you just pay the dang tax and put some money away and do something else.
That means you're doing something, right? Yeah. You're making money.
Right. That's right. So I hate paying tax as much as the next guy, but I also like having a profitable business. So okay, so that one's one that's often violated. This next one, labor cost, and we're not just including paid labor in this. This is owner labor and other labor. Okay, so if you work full time for the ranch and you draw a $20,000 a year salary, that's, we're lying to ourselves, right? Okay, so we're going to make you include, what would it cost to replace yourself? Okay, well, maybe it'd cost me $50,000 to pay somebody else to do what I'm doing. All right, so $50,000 is the number we're going to use. Okay, because just like we don't subsidize the cows with free grass, we cannot subsidize the cows with free labor. So we have to include the economic costs of the labor. So we take that economic cost. So let's say it's one full-time owner. So we might use somewhere between $50,000 and $70,000, depending on what other costs of that labor are included here, right? Are we also billing for the house? Are we also billing for, you know, the pickups and the fuel and all that kind of stuff that goes into it. And then we divide it by the number of cows January 1. We think you should be somewhere around $125 a cow that's going to labor costs. If you're much over that, you're probably over-labored on that cow herd, okay? That's one that's commonly violated. Yep. What this is telling you is it's probably somewhere around 400 cows to support one unit of labor, if you actually run the math on that. Doesn't mean a 300 cow ranch is only going to have one unit of labor. Okay, there might be other things going on. This is just a cow herd. So you might have a cow herd, you might have a yearling program, you might have a haymaking business, you might have farming enterprises. So, you know, with that 300 head cow herd, there might be other enterprises that are also supporting the labor. But if it's just the cows supporting the labor, we think it needs to be about around $125 a cow.
Sure.
All right, so we're pretty well done with the costs. So we add up all those total costs, and if you hit these benchmark targets, you've got about $760 a cow in costs. So remember that. Let's back up to that. Each cow was producing a calf that was worth $835, or every cow January 1 was was producing calf value of $835. So that leaves us essentially $75 to give us a return to our equity that's invested in the cow herd and plus profit for the ranch. Okay. So that's not a whole lot of money really at the end of the day. And that's a pretty lean squeaking machine right there. We just described.
What do you think these numbers say overall about the state of ranching in our current, as we find ourselves?
I guess you better be running a pretty lean ship that's pretty productive. And then even with that, there's not a whole lot of margin in it, right? And now, granted, this is a pretty traditional run outfit.
Right.
Okay? So I think another thing it tells you is, if you just want to run cows and you really want to run a highly profitable business, maybe you should be looking to do something totally out of the box. Okay. And maybe just your standard old running cows isn't going to be a real high margin business.
Can you give me some examples of things that people are doing that are out of the box that help with some of these numbers?
Yeah, I mean, we could go all a whole bunch of different directions. This is the one that's jumping to mind are these guys that are looking for opportunity to add value to undervalued animals and then to turn them for a higher margin and then do it again. Okay, so you talk to folks that are saying, hey, I'm finding some animals that are otherwise undervalued. Maybe they're corrientes, right, that you can pick up from somewhere fairly inexpensive, and I'm going to breed them to a black bull, and I'm going to do that for then I'm going to breed those progeny to another black bull, and then, gosh, I've got a non-discounted animal that I can peddle, right, and then I can start and do it again. So I'm taking what might be a $800 bred corriente cow, and in one or two cycles, I'm turning her in and selling bred cows now that are $1,500-$1,600, right? So I'm upvaluing those animals. Okay, yeah. I'm probably going to have a discounted calf for a year or so doing that, but maybe not so much. Let's go a different route. So let's look for somebody that's going to go and pick up some ground that nobody else wants to lease. Okay, maybe it's the swamp ground, it's the cattails that nobody can handle, and they don't want to fence it, they can't hay it, so they're going to go and lease this stuff, or maybe CRP ground. Okay, we're going to go pick up leases for $20 a cow a month on ground that nobody else wants to mess with, and I'm going to bring in dry cows that are fall calving cows that I can put on that in the middle of the summer that don't have a whole lot of nutritional requirements, and I'm just going to run the heck out of those things. Yeah. Again, this isn't something that you go to the coffee shop and brag about, right? You know, yeah, but these guys are kicking it, you know? So it's about being different and finding opportunities to create value, leveraging it, and then doing it at scale.
You know, and both of those instances are something that you can do on not a lot of owned land. You know, I think if you own the land or if you control the land, then custom grazing makes a lot of sense. But if you don't own or control the land, you can bring in corriente cows and start adding value to their progeny. And, you know, that guy doesn't care. He's getting paid for the grass, same as he would if the cows were black. And you're getting, you know, you have another income stream there. So those are good examples. I appreciate that. What about, you talked about, and I asked you earlier, about the biggest lever we could push was feed costs. How are guys pushing that lever? What are you seeing them do? Is it a matter of buying cheaper hay? Is it a matter of grazing for more of the year? What is it?
Yeah, you know, the first thing that jumps out, obviously, is calving season when we start looking at reducing feed cost. So you're not going to be able to get by with 30 days of feeding when you've got a calf that's being born in February and March, right? Because that cow's going to need good nutrition from the first of the year till green grass. Okay? So, I mean, I shouldn't say – you want to be careful about saying never, right? But I would almost say you can almost never do that with a winter calving cow. You know, to get the hay out of the business, you got to match the cow's nutritional requirements to when the land is going to provide that high-quality feed. So if you've got a May calving cow, we can ask her to do different things in the wintertime than we can that cow that's calving in February, March, right? So we can – that she's going to be second trimester in January, February, so we can ask her to stand out there and graze through some pretty tougher conditions when we wouldn't be able to do that with a cow that's getting ready to calf. So that's the first thing. You know, the other things are, like you said, stockpiling feed, getting better at pasture management, you know, finding strategies to do that. Sometimes it's moving the cows to the feed rather than bringing the feed to the animals. So if you ranch in a place where it snows up to your keister for 6 months out of the year, okay, you're probably not going to be able to winter cows there and be cost competitive. Okay? I mean, I shouldn't say you won't be able to. Maybe you can find a way to do it, but maybe it's finding a place to send those cows to where somebody else will feed them for you or put them on some grass for you.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's some ideas on that. I mean, guys are going to come up with a lot more ideas than I would. But.
Yep, and it's all good stuff. I appreciate that. And this seems to be pretty easy calculus to me as far as the math on it. And, you know, it's pretty simple. This is how much I spend on repairs. Divide that by the number of cows I have. How much per cow did I spend?
Right.
So I think that's fairly easy economic analysis that most people are keeping track of these numbers anyways. If they'll take the time to divide it by the number of cows, then they can see where they're at and know where they're at and then try to make some changes in the right direction.
It's certainly not rocket science. Let me talk through how we encourage folks to use this. So take your numbers, and you can take your 2018 numbers if 2018's done. I think it's really more useful to put projections on here, but let's say somebody wanted to know how they compared against this. So they're going to write their 2018 actuals down next to these numbers. And so write yours off down to the right. And just you know, like you said, sit down, figure it out. It'll take you 2 hours of your time to figure this out probably if you're doing it for the first time. And then write your numbers off to the right. And then grab a red and a yellow and a green highlighter. Okay. Go right down through this list. And anything you're missing the target significantly on, highlight that in red. Anything you might be just missing that target on, or maybe you're pretty close to, highlight it in yellow. And then anything you're beating the targets on, highlight that in green. Now get everybody from the ranch together and put this thing up on a flip chart or a whiteboard or something like that, and have everybody look at it. Okay, and then first of all, get consensus that, hey, this is how we did the numbers, and we're close on these. Okay, so people are satisfied that your numbers are close. And then say, all right, which one of these ones that's highlighted in red do we have leverage to attack? And then let's get folks to agree on, you know what, our weaning rate last year was only 82%, and the target here is 90. You know, and I think if we changed, you know, when we're in this pasture, maybe we had a larkspur issue, you know, or we changed when we're over here, I think we can really, really make some difference on that. Okay, cool. So let's say we've got leverage on that one. Maybe the next one you highlighted was feed cost per cow, hay cost per cow. Target's $50. We're at $200. Oh, boy. Okay. What could we do to reduce hay cost per cow? Oh, well, somebody throws out a couple ideas. So you want to get one or two of these items that you're missing the targets on that are highlighted in red that you feel like you have leverage on, and then develop some strategies as a team to address those.
Right.
And then you've got to vet the strategy. Okay, if this thing worked well, how good might it be? If it are we exposing ourselves to risk by doing this? Okay. So if somebody said, hey, cost per cow, well, let's just not feed between now in March. Okay. Well, that might be a strategy to reduce hay cost per cow, but it's going to have some downsides to it too, right?
So decrease pregnancy rate.
Okay. So you got to vet the strategies. And then once you've got them vetted, now we've got a plan to attack it. Okay. So that's the way you use these. You don't try to attack everything in the first year. But you do identify where am I weak, and then also you look at the areas that you're strong, and you say, well, in the changes we make, let's not screw this up. Okay? So if you've got really good at if your cow depreciation cost is really low, let's not come up with a strategy that raises your cow depreciation cost above the benchmark. Right? So that's really where the power in these are, is it provides an opportunity to focus management in the areas where it can have the greatest return to the bottom line. So often we see ranchers that are out there spinning their wheels, working on things that aren't going to have a big return. I'm going to pick on one that's a pet peeve of mine. It might spend a month or two a year reading EPDs and trying to pick out the next bull for the ranch. Okay. You go look at the cost side of things. Your preg rates are good. Your weaning rates are good. Your calf value per cow is good. How much leverage is there by increasing the genetics of your herd?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a waste of time. I mean, maybe not entirely, but for the most part, we're focusing on things that we like and that we're good at, not necessarily the things that need to be done on the ranch.
Yep, and that red highlighter can help you see those things a little bit more clearly or starkly or shockingly, however, whatever it takes to get you moved off of center and trying to do something a little bit different. So that's a good tool.
I think so. So
Dallas, thank you for your time today. I think we've talked about your transition and stuff already, but I'm really excited for you, and I appreciate you taking the time again.
Cool. Thanks so much, Clay. It's Working Cows still is in my playlist. I listen to it every week, and some of them I really enjoy. The one recently with the Red Hills Rancher, that was a blast. I enjoyed that episode. So thanks for your efforts in doing this. You're touching a lot of people, Clay, and you're starting to change some lives, man. So it's awesome. I commend you for your efforts.
Well, thank you. It was your idea.
Well, you're the one that did it.
All right. Have a good night.
All right. You too.
Exciting times there for Dallas and the Ranch Management Consultants and the High Plains Ranch Practicum. I really encourage you to check out hpranchpracticum.com, and you can register there. Registration is open now. First class starts in the end of June. Some great guest speakers, as we talked about, and really look forward to the opportunities. And who knows, if you are one of the classmates for this year's class, maybe my wife and I will swing in there towards the end of September. So hope to see you there, and really looking forward to the next couple of weeks, what we've got planned for you. Hopefully, I know I was late with last week's episode, and so this is this week's episode, and then I hope to make it up to you with maybe even an extra episode and a couple of bonus episodes this week. But hey, I'm not going to get too far ahead of myself. We'll see what I can get done. But thanks for all the support, and keep your eyes peeled to workingcows.net for the newest episode of the Working Cows Podcast coming your way real soon.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.